Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 594.
Today we hear from Simon, who asks,
what are your thoughts on using common but incorrect terms and on moving with the times as words change meaning? For example, decimate used to, and I think still technically does, mean killing one man in 10 from a group of deserters, but is now mostly used to suggest an almost total wipeout. That's a big jump from 10% to nearly 100.
You have just identified one of my biggest pet peeves in the English language, and I will never submit to the intellectually lazy proposition that to decimate something means to devastate it. This is simply a matter of people hearing a fancy word and wanting to look smart by using it incorrectly because they assume that everyone else around them won't know what it means or they don't know what it means themselves. I hate that. Happens all the time. Intellectual inflation and pretension like that. I completely detest it with every single fiber of my being, and I will not submit. Language does move, and it's a very irritating thing that language does. It's also the source of much of its charm. And for the most part, I'm perfectly happy to slip and slide around with language, but the two things that drive me absolutely bloody bonkers are the euphemism treadmill and pretentious inflation, such as with decimate. Okay, for those of you who don't know, and I don't know how common the understanding really is, but decimate, the clue to decimate is in the name. Decimation was a technical term for a tactic that the Romans used as a disciplinary measure on misbehaving legions who had committed war crimes by their standards, where, say, they were looting the villages of someone who they weren't supposed to loot, or they broke ranks and engaged in cowardice in the middle of a battle, or someone stole something from the company stores and no one could tell what it was, but you could tell what group of soldiers did it. The punishment was to randomly, by lots, pick one out of every 10 people. You'd line them all up, and then you'd throw the dice in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, okay, you're out. And then you'd line all the people that are extracted randomly out, and you would kill them in front of everyone else to set an example. The British used this in the Middle East in particular as a way of putting down village rebellions when they were occupying a territory. If there was an insurgency in a village, they would simply go in and they would, by lots, decimate the village. And not just the men, but women and children would all be up for the lots drawing. It was a very effective terror tactic to keep people down. Decimation doesn't just involve killing 10%. It's particularly wiping out 10% of something in order to achieve control over it. It's a very important part of the word decimate. And to say that the comet came and decimated New York. No, it didn't. The comet doesn't control the populace of New York. It killed them all. It wiped out all the buildings. The comet devastated the area. It razed the area. It did not decimate it. So that particular word is a major pet peeve, and partly because I am a very strong believer in being precise in language. And if I'm going to misuse language, being precise in my misuse of language. There's times you want to use language wrong. So you've got a character who's less educated, who is pretentious, who is trying to express things that he doesn't know how to express, then you would misuse language, but you'd want to do it in a way that makes sense from the point of view of that character. But using language incorrectly because it's fashionable, the net effect is to make your writing less clear. And that's never a good thing. At best, it's going to make your writing dated, because those kinds of shifts, they're not always transitory, but they are frequently faddish, and it's very hard to tell in the moment what's going to wind up being a fad and what's going to wind up being a permanent shift. Unfortunately, decimate's probably going to be a permanent shift, but I'm holding out hope. In meantime, devastate still retains its proper meaning, so I can use that word when I mean that thing. But yeah, you do have to travel with the language. You want to make sure you're intelligible to your audience, and you want to be clear. And part of being clear is to not indulge in the latest linguistic fads, especially when the language is distinctly incorrect. I'll give you an example of distinctly incorrect versus evolving. The word gay. The original meaning of gay was a kind of fun that was light and frivolous and hedonistic and generally disreputable. You would be gay if you were drinking, if you were hitting on a lot of people, if you were at parties where a general level of debauchery was expected, if you were inappropriately merry. That got applied to gay people who were rebranding themselves from being sodomites, which had a thoroughly negative connotation since God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah allegedly for homosexuality, or maybe it was for inhospitable gang rape, who knows. So sodomite, you know, had the connotation of inviting the judgment of God, whereas gay frivolity, while it also was something that God definitely disapproved of, was also kind of fun, you know. And okay, God may disapprove of it, but to hell with God, we're going to go have fun anyway. That was the general notion of the gay 90s, which is why it was called the gay 90s. It was a very high on the hog type of time, like the roaring 20s. Lots of hedonism, lots of drinking, lots of extra money rolling around, and not much else to do with it other than have fun. So when homosexuals rebranded themselves as gay, what they were doing was they were taking the deliberate connotation of we're a fun-loving, frivolous people, and our culture reflects fun-loving frivolity, which gay culture really did, both in the pre-Stonewall era and really all the way up through the 1980s. Gay culture had always been this sort of fun, tongue-in-cheek, countercultural type of thing, very much like Jewish culture was, or at least Jewish artistic culture, for many of the same reasons. And so they co-opted the term, but in co-opting the term, they kept the essential meaning of it. That's an evolution of language, whereas decimation is not a obvious evolution of language. There's a definite, almost deliberate misunderstanding of what the word means. And here's one example like decimation that has eventually become the common way we use the word, and I've given into this because it happened a couple hundred years before I was born. The word apocalypse doesn't mean the end of the world. It means the lifting of the veil, the grand revelation. It was actually a positive thing. But what happened was in the mid-19th century, so I guess it wasn't a couple hundred years before I was born, it was about 100 years before. In the mid-19th century, the dispensationalist tradition got started during the Second Great Awakening in the United States. And dispensationalism is basically the way of reading the Bible that everyone in secular society has gotten familiar with because of the Left Behind movies and all that sort of stuff. You know, the Antichrist is coming, the Tribulation is coming, you know, everything from Rosemary's Baby through the Devil's Advocate through the Left Behind movies, all that basically riffs off of this reading of biblical prophecy. And I put prophecy in scare quotes. And they called it the apocalypse because the final book of the Bible is the Apocalypse of John. In Protestant Bibles, it's called the Revelation because the Greek word apocalypticon, I think it's apocalypticon if I'm conjugating it correctly, literally translates as the revelation. It means I'm showing you something you didn't know. That's all it means. And it was seen as a hopeful thing because it was promising that the churches in Asia Minor were going to survive the persecutions they were undergoing at the time, and all their enemies were going to get killed. You know, it was a hopeful, subversive political tract is what it was. But the dispensationalists in mid-19th century America had formulated this notion that the Bible was written for all people at all times to mean the same thing, and so it had to be a prophecy about the future from the point of view of the 19th century. And so the revelation wasn't a revelation that everything was going to be all right. It was a revelation that God was going to do terrible things to the world and all the Christians were going to be persecuted in the future, instead of being written to Christians that were being persecuted now, telling them, don't worry, your enemies are going to get theirs and you're going to be fine. So that gave the word apocalypse a really dark, doomy cast, and that's how the word changed meanings completely, flipping from one to the other, kind of like the way decimation is being flipped because of historical ignorance and some of the same sorts of things, historical ignorance and intellectual pretension. Flipped the word apocalypse from being an almost unalloyed positive to an almost unalloyed negative. The same thing's happening with decimation, except it's being flipped from a very terrifying war tactic, something that connotes control and enslavement and whatnot, to something that just implies destruction. So even though the scope, the numerical scope of devastation is way bigger than decimation, the actual implications of the original proper meaning of decimation are much, much darker than the implications of the word devastation. And yet decimation is being used to mean devastation, which is robbing it of a lot of its original darkness and creepiness, which is a crying shame. Anyway, I don't know if there was anything coherent in there, but I hope you guys found it interesting. Thanks very much for the question. And I'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.